A 5-day turnaround, injuries, and a dead-eye Franklin. The Swans in a nail-biter. It was another ripping round of footy, kicked off in glorious fashion by another Swans vs Essendon cliffhanger. There's just something about the way the two teams play. Don't know what it is, but they always bring the close games. We've got the review, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the usual stuff. I'm Justin, and with me is Josh this Monday night. It's the Swans Cast, the number one Sydney Swans weekend review podcast. Josh, thank you for coming on again. How was your weekend?
My weekend was okay. It was okay. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
The Swans didn't bump it up to a good?
Well, that was definitely the highlight of the week. And I was pretty crook. I actually didn't watch the game live because I was crook. I watched the replay. So my weekend was kind of average. But, you know, the game was good.
Oh, the game was sensational.
That's another great game I've missed live because I was doing something else.
Well, last week it was fishing. This last weekend, it's now being sick. I don't know what you're going to do for the next one.
To be honest, I think I'm actually working. I think I'm actually rostered on shift that day, so I won't be watching that one live either.
Oh, no. I might have to get another guest on.
Yeah, well, I mean, you'll have to tap Steve or Steven or Heather and give me the sack, I think.
Yeah, I think you're on thin ice.
Yeah, you can dock my pay.
Dock your pay, yep. I'll take all $0 of it.
I'll end up paying you.
Yeah. Pretty sure you do already.
Oh, well.
Yeah,
well,
there you go. Top of the agenda, we've got a couple of big things to give an update on or discuss. The first Massive. One... Heaney, broken hand, 4 weeks. That one came from the match, Josh.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I know it got a little bit of airtime in the press, but I'm surprised it didn't actually get more than it did. The only thing I can think of is that even though the footage looked like he hit that other player, I can't even think who it was now, may have hit him in the head. They must have got a report from Essendon saying it wasn't contact with the head at all, otherwise he would be almost certainly suspended for that, I think, if it was a strike to the head.
Yeah, and then we've got Rampy. News came out today, first reported by the Herald Sun, the Daily Telegraph, finally Fox Sports, and then Sydney finally acknowledged through their own portal that Rampy has been playing with a broken finger and will miss at least 4 weeks.
Not good timing for us.
No, it's not. We've got four big games coming up. We've got the Giants, which might not be the biggest miss, given that it's going to be Toby Green, and we've got players who can play on him.
Yep.
And Gold Coast Suns, it's going to be a little bit tough because they've got King, and they've got some good players in the forward line. The big one, obviously, well, the big two matches are Geelong and Melbourne coming up after that, when we definitely, desperately need Rampy.
Yeah, especially, both of those, but especially the Ds at the moment.
Yeah,
and I know Geelong's a little bit down, but you've got to expect they've got to be a response out of them in the next week or two.
Yeah, they never play poorly against us. They always lift for us.
No, is that game in Geelong?
No, fortunately it's in Sydney this time.
Oh, so really?
So we might be on the up and up on that one, but I mean, Rampy missing, he's a crucial link in our back line.
You know he is.
But look, Tom McCartan, he has been sensational this year. Mm-hmm. He's actually our top-ranked defender, key defender for the Swans.
Yep. Does not surprise me whatsoever.
So hopefully he can temper the loss. We are looking at a number of replacements who will come in. There's people already calling for Will Gould, but not so sure about that one, Josh. What would you say is the obvious replacement for Rampy?
The obvious replacement's going to be Milliken.
Yep.
I think that this is probably a good week, given where the Giants are at the moment. I actually wouldn't mind Will Gould coming in for this game. I guess the problem is, though, that if he's not going to stay there for the teams we've got upcoming and they're going to go with Milliken for those, they'd want to bring Milliken in anyway.
Yeah.
The other thing that might happen, and this would be the outside one, is that Rowbottom comes in for Heaney, Dylan Stevenson comes in to the middle, and they ship Mills back to the back line for the next few weeks.
Yeah, that's another option as well. He can fill that role. The only issue, I guess, is that we, in the defense, we would have a significant lack of tools. So it might even mean shifting someone like Sam Reed back
Sam Reed
as well. Yeah. And he has been playing lights out the last 2-3 weeks. He has had some very, very good matches. Well, so that would be a huge loss for us.
This is the 3-year Sam Reid cycle, isn't it? So he goes injured, fantastic year, injured.
Yep.
I don't know, a bit like Franklin, he has a confidence about the way he plays at the moment. I don't think we've seen him for quite a few years now. But
I'd say 2012. Like his second year in AFL, he's playing like that.
Oh, no. His second efforts are awesome. His below the knees work's been awesome the last 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Winning 2-on-1s pretty frequently.
A big moments been awesome. In both matches, too. Very big moments.
Yeah, including taking a mark that Franklin would have taken.
Yeah. Fortunately, didn't cost as much in the end, but that one...
Do you reckon that cost them a beer later on? They're like, nah, mate, you owe me one for that.
Oh, yeah, definitely would have got back at him for that one. You know, don't stick your hand out, mate. I'm the big bud where I'm coming through. I'm on my wheels. Do not get in the way. you kind of think, I reckon a buddy maybe 6 to 8 years ago might have just cleaned him up.
Probably.
As a bit of a like, I'm coming through, man. Don't you get in my way.
Yep.
Yeah. Kind of like big Barry Hall, you know, big bustling bad Barry Hall. He would have just cleaned up all comers, teammates or not, and been just like, yeah, no, you're in my way, get out of the way.
Yeah, well, maybe not. We would have had a more open forward line and Barry would have been the only person there anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, often he was the only player in the forward line. So, the guy from Eagles, he can attest to that one as well. And a few other players. I think it was, can't remember, Scott Thompson. From North Melbourne, when he had the brawl at full forward.
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
So, classy, well, I wouldn't say classy, but certainly classic Barry Hall moments. Just a quick message from us. We have reopened our Redbubble store, so we've chucked some items up on our shop. Have a look if you want. Reach out to us if you're interested in some products, but you can also find us on redbubble.com. Just search for The Swans Blog. We've got tons of stuff with the updated logo design, so check it out and have a look, and let us know what you like.
That'd be really helpful if people could have a look at that. We don't make any money out of it; just the little bit of profit that does generate just goes to cover the hosting costs for the podcast, and that's it. We certainly don't get to pocket any of this, and Redbubble certainly makes more out of it than we do.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It goes back also into the podcast fees as well for CleanFeed. We use CleanFeed for recording. Not the cheapest solution out there, but it does a good job. So it all goes back into the blog and the various products and services that we use to create our content. So into the match review. I found a bottle of alcohol, and yes, the same as last week, Josh. Hey, if there's any beer sponsors out there, we would love to hear from you. But this drink is about as wasteful as the Swans were in the first quarter. It's not a particularly good drink, not very palatable. It's pretty hit and miss. And there were moments in that first quarter, Josh, which the Swans could have been glorious like this mediocre drink, but in the end, just they shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, no, we sort of did, and it almost came back to haunt us in the end, didn't it? It really, for all the talk about how good Essendon were, it really should have been like a 4-6 goal win for us. It should have been a comfortable win, and it wasn't in the end.
Yeah, hands down, we in the first quarter alone, we missed some absolutely dead set golden chances.
Mm-hmm.
Heaney missed one. He gave off another. I think Papley missed one. A couple other players missed them. And
Franklin missed one.
That Franklin missed one. Yeah. And we just gave them the lead. There were 4 lead changes in the first quarter, but we just gave them the lead in the end.
Yep. Yep. A couple of poor decisions in the back 50 or in the back half as well. There was a crossfield kick that was intercepted, and there was something else that I can't remember what that was. Some kind of a turnover result, and another really. The last 2 goals that Essendon had before quarter time were really easy.
Yeah.
Completely avoidable. Things that just came from, you know, like a momentary lapse in concentration, and then they poll on the next, how many was after break? 3?
Kick 4. 3 in the first, and then
I think
they
were
6
straight at one stage, and we were substantially behind at that point.
I think it was 25 points. So it's hard to describe. Like, for me watching it, coming out from the gates, I knew it was 5-day break. Things were going to happen. Things are going to be difficult for the players. And to be honest, I was very surprised that we didn't rotate. And after the match...
Yep.
Very surprised that we didn't rotate. We needed to rotate a couple of those players, and There were a couple of players who definitely needed to be rotated because they weren't exactly performing well beforehand. And they performed quite poorly on the night and looked quite tired.
Yep.
Nick Blakey in particular did not have a good game. And that's going to happen. You're young, developing. You're going to be up and down. But he was showing signs before this, before the match and during the match. It was just getting worse as the game progressed. And you know, that fourth quarter kick out on the full when he absolutely burned Buddy, who was leading back to the goal square.
Yep.
That seals the match. It seals the match with probably 8 to 10 minutes to go. We're up by a couple goals. Again, we needed Franklin to kick us, you know, off to the lead and off to the win with about 2.5, 3 minutes left to seal it for us. But yeah, we didn't make it easy on ourselves.
We didn't. But for all those, for all the stuff going forward and Nick Blakey burning Franklin, and if you actually want to have a funny moment, go and try and lip read what Franklin says after Blakey sprays that shot.
We're really not going to say that on the podcast.
No, it's pretty easy to figure out what he says. Just the inaccuracy in front of goal in the first and fourth quarters was a shocker.
Yeah, it's one of the, you're right, it's a match we should have won by 4 or 5 goals. If not, we could have won it by 6 to 7. And it's for me, watching, I know you're watching on replay, and I know a lot of people who are watching it were getting frustrated by the way we're, you know, shooting on goals. I mean, we were missing goals from directly in front.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the misses were unforgivable. I think Sam Reed missed basically almost a dead set soda from in front, from about 30 metres out. And, you know, it took an Errol Goulden moment in the middle of the ground when we just looked dead, we looked flat.
How good was he? How good was he in that 10-minute patch there? He just made it happen.
He did. He dragged us back into the match. He single-handedly dragged us back into the match in that second quarter. And his second quarter was, I think it was ranked his best quarter of the year.
Yeah, right.
According to AFL player ratings.
Yep.
He was phenomenal in that second quarter. Without him, I would say the result would most definitely have gone in Essendon's favour.
Well, if he doesn't have that 10 minutes where he was boiling hot,
yep,
I'd say Essendon put another 2 on us and then we're in real trouble. But he,
yeah,
where he chased down that contest, won the ball back, sent it upfield, and then
he was involved in the next passage of play.
He was involved in the next passage of play. That's right.
And it was a 1-on-2, 1-on-3, and he still won it.
Yep.
And he still got the ball out, and just the next couple of passages over the next couple of contests throughout the rest of the quarter, he was just freakishly good.
Yep,
phenomenal. And he just somehow finds a way to set players up, Nick. And I know that Hickey didn't get a goal this time and he had a tough one, you know, on the boundary and he missed it. But I think that's his first blemish of the year. But the way the kid plays was amazing. And speaking of Hickey, this guy has been outstanding. He has, for me, been the recruit of the year, even, you know, including Dom Pike.
Yep, yep. Yeah, no, Hickey's been outrageously good for us. The other player that I'd like to call out here too is that his fourth quarter was, you know, exceptional by his standards. And that's, and seeing we're on this, another player who's been outstanding for us, and his fourth quarter was particularly good, and that was Justin McInerney.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, hands down. That last quarter was amazing.
His vision to put that ball out for Franklin to run onto it. And what was any other place that becomes a 2 or 3 on 1 contest and Franklin loses it every single time. But that kick of McInerney's into Franklin that put us up, essentially sealed us the game, was a phenomenal bit of vision. But his whole fourth quarter was great.
Yeah. I really
like McInerney. I don't think he's sort of in that group at the moment. He's probably not getting recognised as much as they should because of Errol and Campbell and Franklin's return and Mills in the midfield, but McInerney's been great for the last 2 or 3 weeks. He's been awesome. Yeah,
he has been. And it's not missed on this podcast. Every podcast we've talked about him.
Yes.
Now, we talked about him last week as maybe let's just give him a rest for a week, but we said, you know, does he need a rest? He came in the second round. I mean, kind of. He kind of looked at times like he needed a rest, but that last quarter was... Like Goulden in the second quarter, those two young kids helped us win the match in some of the most impactful ways that they did. And a lot of people criticised James Bell. There was a couple of threads going up on some of the Facebook groups and Twitterverse and a couple other places where James Bell got attacked and, you know, he's not good enough. What's he doing? He's not AFL quality. His impact from, I think it was about 15 minutes in from the second quarter throughout the game, he had far more impact than George Hewitt, Cunningham and Blakey and a couple of other players, according to AFL player ratings. But it wasn't he didn't get many stats. I think he only ended up with about 4 or 5 disposals. But it was actually what he did off the ball and his pressure off the ball, which forced a lot of mistakes from Essendon. And there was a couple of really important contests, especially in the third quarter, in the fourth quarter, where he was able to impact the contest or win the ball. And it was crucial for us in those circumstances that he actually nullify or win.
Yep. Yeah. And similar to a different extent, Harry Cunningham, I saw, was in for a bit of flack this week as well. And to that, I'd say, what exactly did McDonald Tipping Woody do?
He did nothing.
You know,
he did absolutely nothing.
No, that's right. He was almost a non-factor. And every time the ball went near him, Cunningham was there. Cunningham wore him like a glove. Like, it wasn't quite a hard tag, but it was pretty close. And yeah, right, I say Cunningham didn't rack up stats for this game, but neither did Tipper. And that was a win in its own.
So, oh, hands down.
Cunners was just fine this week. And I've never been able to understand the Cunningham hate.
No, we in the Bloghouse, Mr. and Mrs. Blogs, we love him. He's one of our favourites. This guy, he goes in, he just does his job. No fuss, no muss, just gets in, does it, and gets out. He's not this flashy person. He doesn't have this outrageous personality. He's not like a Rampy who's like, you see him everywhere or something like that. He's just very quiet, consummate professional. He's very much like Nick Smith.
Yep.
Doesn't have the lockdown ability that Nick Smith had, but the guy is fantastic.
Just goes about it. A bit like George Hewitt in a roundabout sort of way. And probably, I wish Gary Rowan was more like him. Do you know what I mean? In his consistency. So, like,
less said about Gary Rowan, the better. I've got a few choice comments I'm not going to utter on the podcast.
No, you don't need any hate mail about that.
No, I think some of that hate might stem from the fact that he started off as a forward and then a winger, kind of midfielder. But he didn't have like a huge amount of impact. Then he went back to defense. And ever since he's gone back to defense full time, he has been solid.
Yeah.
Like rock solid. And we've had Zach Jones, who came through, who started as a defender into midfield. And I mean, do we miss him sometimes? Yes, but not really. Look at the way we play now.
A couple of years ago, I think he was indisposable just because he was one of the few we'd had who would really take the game on. But
yeah, exactly.
He doesn't fit into our best 22 now at all.
No, you watch him the way he plays to St Kilda. He gets a ball and he runs. He carries the ball. He doesn't spread it. He doesn't have the vision and he never had the patience. He just get the ball and rush disposal.
Yeah.
So the players we've got now fit much better. Dylan Stevens, who you talked about before, the fact that he can't get a game it's stunning.
Mm.
He's tailor-made for this team.
Yep.
But that's just how good Chad Warner is playing at the moment to actually keep him out. And this kid is playing phenomenal. The Chad is playing phenomenal football. Thank you for correcting me.
Yep, the Chad.
Also, you can look at Parrish. He and Mills went head-to-head. Bit of a, you know, they kind of drew.
Yep.
Zach Merritt, a lot of people lauded his game. You know, he placed
high. Yeah, 1/3 of his touches were turnovers, though.
Well, I was about to say that his fantasy points were high, his AFL fantasy points were high, his AFL rating was high, and he butchered the ball.
Polled 4 coaches' votes, and out of 20 low 20s disposals, 9 of them were turnovers. Yep. I'll give him this. So he had a freak goal.
Well, that was Parrish.
Oh, it was Parrish. Of course it was Parrish. Oh, well then, I'll take that
Parrish's
back.
Game Merritt, was better than Merritt.
Merritt
down.
Overrated. Oh, Parrish was way better than Merritt. I don't know why I thought Merritt kicked that goal. Parrish was way better than Merritt, but I thought Merritt's game was a little bit overrated.
Well, I'm guessing, we'll get to the AFL votes later, but I'm guessing 3 of those votes from Zach Merritt came from Bombers coach.
Yeah, righto. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so we'll cover that later. We got some stats to go through as well.
And did I not say, just one last thing, did I not say that Jake Stringer would be dangerous this week?
Oh, yeah, he was. His first quarter looked, you know, Jake Stringer classic.
The fact
shit after quarter time. You tipped almost nothing after quarter time, though.
Yeah, except for the bit where he was rucking.
That
was interesting. It was interesting.
And Hickey fell over, and I think Hickey just looked at himself and went, yeah, that shit ain't happening again. Yeah. So then the next time he rucked, I think he almost threw him to the ground.
Yeah.
And then that was the end of Jake Stringer rucking when Hickey just like smashed it out.
Ragdolled him.
Yep. So, yeah, it was pretty funny watching him just like tilt over. And I was just like, come on, man. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. Look, their pressure in the last quarter was phenomenal. It really was. It was off the charts elite. It was like St. Kilda's pressure against West Coast. It was off the chart. They had 36 tackles, but we still had more of the ball. We still dominated possession and had more of the ball, and we kicked 2-6.
Couldn't put it on. Yeah, kicked 2-6, couldn't put it on the scoreboard.
Plus one on the full.
Yep.
Yeah, so even with their pressure, which was sensational, you cannot take anything away from Essendon's effort. Our performance was bloody good in that pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for a team with a whole lot of young and inexperienced players, they were fantastic.
We would have, last year and the year before, we would have almost certainly folded in that fourth quarter.
Like
and,
a cheap suit.
Yeah, if not the third.
No, I agree.
And actually, I think despite the fact we couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, that it probably shows that there's a resilience back in the team that we haven't had for the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, there's a bit of belief, a bit of confidence.
Mm.
And it's... I haven't seen it for a long time, just belief in the system. Just the system will sort you out, just stick to it. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
They found, you know, passages of play in the fourth quarter where they were able to open Essendon up.
Yep.
Not often.
And I'm so glad that it's probably the first time we've been tested on the scoreboard. This year. We didn't just go back to form, stick one behind the ball, you know, put an extra behind the ball, flood the back line, and then not be able to move it forward and try and defend a really narrow lead at the end. It was just attack.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was telling in our disposal efficiency as well, which was...
Yeah.
Quite poor, well, certainly from our standards of the first three rounds, which have been anywhere from like 72 to 76%. We only went at 67%.
Yeah, and part of that's Essendon's pressure in the last as well.
Yeah, which we already said was elite. But the other interesting thing, and was contentious for Essendon supporters, and also a couple of Fox sports-based TV shows and whatnot, making a big deal of, was the free kicks, and especially the Tom Hickey non-free kick.
Well, yeah, I don't know how many times, you know, whenever this comes around, but I've always got the same thing, that if you're worried about one or two umpiring calls being the cause of you losing the game, you've got to figure out somewhere else. So for argument's sake, say that Sam Reed not getting awarded holding the ball, which would have almost certainly been a goal in the first quarter.
Yeah, exactly.
If that had been the difference in us winning or losing that game, you can't go, well, we kicked, what'd we kick? Something 17 behinds, but it was the umpire who made us lose the game. It's complete and utter rubbish, you know. So
There was a couple of ones. Goulden getting decapitated, called play on.
Yeah, it was.
To be fair, that was called play on for the majority of the weekend. So although it looked bad for us in our game, it was consistently umpired, at least, you know, to a degree throughout the weekend. But yeah, that holding the ball one was 100% there. And it was the same one as pretty much the Brisbane Geelong game from round two. It was carbon copy. It should have been paid.
Yep, but that's not why Essendon lost. And if Essendon had have won, it's not umpiring why we would have lost. It would have been a poor conversion in front of goal. So it's just excuse-making, you know. There's very few games where I think you can legitimately blame umpires for losing a match. Where you've played a good game and they've stuffed it up and lost it for you. Like, they're very few and far between, but this definitely wasn't one of them.
No, it wasn't. And look, there's a couple of key areas which definitely contributed to the win. One was that even though the hit-out difference wasn't huge, it was only 8 hit-out difference to us, we recorded between Hickey and Sam Reed 12 hit-outs to advantage, when 2-meter Peter only had 4 hit-outs to advantage.
Yeah, and 2-meter Peter got absolutely ragdolled by Hickey at one stage as well.
Even Sam Reed. Sam Reed was dominating him around the ground. And Sam Reed had 4 hit-outs to advantage. 4. Yep. I mean, this guy gets 2 hit-outs lucky in ruck.
Yep. But you're right. Other than tackles and a bit of disposal efficiency, we dominated everything else. Yeah. Like
23 clearances.
It really should have been a 4-6 goal win for us. It really should have been.
Yeah. We smashed them in centre clearances and contested possessions. Three of Essendon's strongest stats before coming into this game.
Yep.
So, yeah. No, we punished them. We'll just quickly go through the best players. I'll kick it off with Tom Hickey. 14 disposals, 12 of them contested. He had 8 clearances, 27 hitouts, and 9 to advantage.
Like, when was the last time we had a ruckman putting those numbers up? 27 hitouts with 9 to advantage. You'd almost have to go back to Mumford, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. You would for this one.
So good.
That's what contributed so much to the centre clearance dominance.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. It was sensational. Next was Lukey Parker. Leading disposal getter, I think, with 32, 16 contested, 7 marks, 8 intercept possessions, 1 goal, 6 clearances, 8 inside 50s, and 11 ground ball gets, and 10 AFL coaches award votes.
Yes, mm-hmm. We're going to cover that one later.
Yep.
Sam Reed, 2 goals, 7 marks, 6 of them contested, and they were pretty bloody big ones too.
Yep.
8 hitouts and 4 of them to advantage. He also had, believe it or not, 7-1 percenters and a goal assist.
I would believe that with the way he's gone the last 3 weeks. I would believe he would be racking up the 1 percenters. Lloyd. 25 disposals, 3 tackles, 11 intercept possessions and 7 marks, and will be working his ringer off for the next 4 weeks.
Yep. Hands down. He'll actually have to play a defensive role. But the fact is, getting tackles is mighty impressive for a guy who went months without tackles at one point.
Yeah, that's sort of only ever been the real knock I've had on Jake. And I understand that they actually wanting to be that loose man is not doing it, but sometimes you just go in there.
Just get in there.
Just
tackle him. the Chad, 23 disposals, 6 clearances, 6 tackles. He was big in patches throughout the game and he had some major moments. And I'm going to put this out there. I can't remember a 19-year-old breaking tackles like this guy breaks him. And he's not the strongest player. He's not the quickest player. But he just smashes through him like he's going through a brick wall.
Yeah, a bit of Mr. Teflon going on there.
Oh, he is phenomenal in the way that he moves. He is super balanced. Straight into the social question, Josh. So, we put out a question after the Thursday night superb win, and the question was, who or what has impressed you the most this season so far and why? We got a lot of responses on this one, Josh. We took the best ones from Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Would you like to kick us off?
Yeah, sure. With Sarah from Facebook, watching the young and old players work as a team is excellent.
Yeah, and that was something that Kennedy touched on too in his interview a week ago. John from Twitter, our ability to bring the intensity to all four quarters of a game, that's what was lacking all last season. And as you said before, Josh, the season before. And probably the season before that too.
Mm-hmm. Jaden from Facebook says, I think, one, the fact that everyone except Daisy Pierce put us as 16th or 17th place team and we exceeded expectations. Yep. Pretty smart chick, that Daisy Pierce.
I think in the comment thread on that one also that Damian Barrett also did the same thing as well.
Yeah, and Rowan Connolly had us in the finals too.
Yep.
In his preseason prediction. Yeah. Yeah, he thought we'd be between 6 and 8, yeah.
Yeah, I think they all did roughly 6 and 8. So we've got Kate from Facebook, Don Park and John Longmire working together beautifully. 100% on that one.
If it's not my favourite at the moment for the year, or for the season, it would be definitely my second, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Darren from Facebook, the relentless effort and contested ball was amazing, but the execution of marks is what is most impressive.
Yeah, there was a few seasons then when we couldn't mark the ball to save ourselves, especially Sam Reed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nate from Twitter, lots will say the kids, but I'm going to go with Tom Hickey. He's really flourishing. Yeah, there was a long message about this one, so we had to turn this one down. But yeah, the Tom Hickey love is definitely coming through.
Yep. Nova from Twitter, ability to adapt under pressure. Bombers didn't let us play the way that worked so well in the last few weeks. Yeah, that's true, isn't it? That there's a level of creativity and hustle as well that we sort of haven't had before. But like I'll say it again, I'm just so happy we weren't tempted just to stick extras behind the ball, which is what we would have done previous seasons.
Yeah, exactly. Tyler from Instagram, definitely the Chad and Errol Goulden as they've been playing like all Australians, even with them playing less than 10 games.
Do you reckon they'd give a first-year player All-Australian?
A first-year player's won a Brownlow. And a first gamer almost won the Norm Smith medal.
When was that?
I think it was...
I'm convinced Raoul was going to win the Brownlow last year.
Until he had, eight votes in the first three matches.
Yeah. The guy was a machine.
Yeah.
It's doable. I tell you what. Errol would have to be the red-hot favourite for the Rising Star at the moment, though.
Yeah. Yeah, he would be. But I think also he'd have to be in the discussion for All-Australian. If they don't give it to him, I don't know what small forward's playing better than him at the moment.
Hey, come on. Remember. Well, I mean...
They should have given it to Papley, but then they didn't.
Oh, they've given some absolute stinkers in All-Australian, though. Let me, or do I need to remind you the year that Josh Kennedy didn't get it, even though he's the competition's leading contested ball winner, and they gave it to Captain Courageous from Geelong, who'd been out injured for a third of the season. Do I have to bring that back up again?
Oh, then they gave him the captaincy, too.
They gave him the captaincy.
That was back in 2017?
Something like that.
Yeah, 2016, 2017.
It's disgraceful, anyway.
All right, the last social response, that is a tangent and a half, but the last social response comes from Chris from Facebook, Errol Goulden. Out of the three rookies we picked up out of the draft, I thought he was actually the one with the least potential. And Chris, you're not the only one who thought that. A lot of people thought that. I don't know, Josh, if you'd seen him play in the NEAFL matches beforehand or the Academy matches?
No, I was too busy dealing with COVID-related stuff when those matches were happening. So I got to watch Buckley's last year. I'm really out of touch with these guys in their last NEAFL year.
Yeah, the kid was a goer in the academy league. But
watch plenty of Sam Wicks though.
Yeah, especially when he played NEAFL. Sam Wicks was good. Player of the Year votes. Josh, could you please kick us off with the Swan Blogs Player of the Year for round 4?
Yeah, right. So in fifth place with one vote was Callum Mills. Two votes, Jakey Lloyd. Three for Sam Reid. Four for Luke Park. And five for... Oh, I didn't realise that was coming. Tom Hickey. Well, I was about jumped out of my seat then.
Yep, the producer's at it again. The producer is playing funny buggers.
Yeah. Tom Hickey, the animal.
For five votes...
Five votes, Tom Hickey.
So how's the leaderboard looking, Josh? If I can speak to
English. So fifth is Luke Park with four votes. Fourth is Chad. Oh, I can't even count here. There's six players on there. So Luke Park is sixth with four votes. Chad Warner, five. Sam Wicks, five. Errol Goulden, eight. Callum Mills, 10. And Tom Hickey, is leading the pack at 11 at the moment.
Yep.
Go Tom Hickey.
And look, this isn't much of a surprise because... we've got the AFLCA votes, and I'll touch on the fans' player of the year as well. And Tom Hickey, believe it or not, leads the Swans Blogs Player of the Year award, the AFLCA votes for Sydney, and the fans' player of the year as well.
Yeah.
This dude is on fire. Yeah. So AFLCA votes came in today. Luke Parker, no surprise, with 10 votes, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
Followed up with 8 for Sam Reid.
Yep.
Zach Merritt.
I don't understand that don't understand for it. Zach Merritt, but anyway.
Four. Three for Tom Hickey. Two for Callum Mills. One for Josh Kennedy. And one from Jordan Ridley, who was, he was all right. He was good.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I don't know how Chad Warner doesn't get a vote there.
Well, you've got Rutten giving 3 to Merritt and 1 to Ridley.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's how it happened.
That's how it happened. But no, but Parrish doesn't get a mention.
No, and Parrish was light years ahead of Merritt. Plus, there's other players who are way better than Merritt. Just saying.
Yeah, I know. Do you think it's just like a sympathy vote? Oh, I didn't rate him all. I thought he had a stinker.
Yeah, well, he might have had a role, which was to hand the ball over. Who knows?
Well, stinker might be a little bit too harsh, but he wasn't outstanding. He certainly wasn't AFL-CA vote material.
No, he handed the ball over to the Swans far too many times.
Uh-huh.
So our leaderboard, and this is where things get a little bit interesting. We've got Tom Hickey on 14 votes, Callum Mills on 13, Wicks and Parker tie for third on 10. Then you got Goulden in fifth with 9, and Reed and Dawson tied for sixth in 8 points each.
Mm-hmm.
So it's looking good for us. Obviously, we're nowhere near the top of the leaderboard. We're a mile off the top of the leaderboard in this case, but that's looking like another dustpan run runaway.
Care about the leaderboard. I'm just happy with the even contribution.
Oh, it's been sensational. We've had 3 different players who have picked up 10 votes.
Yep, which in seasons past definitely would not have been the case.
No, it would have been like
Heaney, Lloyd, and I don't know, one other person. Mills would have had a couple. Parker, and that would be basically
Kennedy, definitely. Dawson, a couple here and there. But it is great to see that representation. And often it's been very difficult for us to actually pick player of the year from our side, purely based on the fact that everyone's just been so even in their contribution.
Yep.
All right, time for our Monday champions and Monday villains. Josh, could you please kick us off?
You know, I relentlessly bagged the crap out of Lowell Kilda last week, but this week, my champion is St Kilda. They've been re-promoted to St Kilda from Lowell Kilda for that amazing fourth quarter against the Eagles the other day, where they put on, 8-4, I think, to 1 behind. They were behind, they rose to the occasion, and just once Shannon Hearn was off the field, West Coast got a bit, wobbly at the knees, and St Kilda just went for the jugular. And to be fair, they were actually pretty good for the whole match, but the last quarter in particular, they just went to town, and they were phenomenal. They've still got a little bit of their mojo, and they should have been bloody embarrassed about how they played the week before, but this week, my champion is St Kilda for turning it around.
Oh, I love it. After one mediocre, one dreadful performance, they really lit up Etihad Stadium, and it was sensational to see that last quarter.
Absolutely torched West Coast. Yep.
West Coast couldn't touch them. They couldn't get near it, and their pressure was more than Essendon's. Their pressure rating was over 210. It was past elite. It was literally off the chart.
Yep.
I've never seen that. I've never seen a pressure rating that high. So every time they had the ball, they just turned it over, and Saints just took it down the other end and scored. It was just phenomenal.
Just flattened them.
Yep. Which brings me to my champion. Now, last week, I sinned out Brad Hill because he was dreadful, and he was one of the worst players by a mile of the round. No, my champion's not Brad Hill, but it would be fitting if it was. But my champion for this one is Nat Fyfe in his return.
Mm-hmm.
He was back to his best. Now, I love to give him the nickname Fat Knife because he cuts through butter just like a fat knife. And he was great for Freo. And he was one of the main reasons why Freo got the win. Great performer. And it was sensational seeing him back on the ground.
Needs to work on his goal kicking, though.
Yeah, you could say that about a few people, but...
Yeah. But, I mean, that's never been his thing, though, is it?
No.
He's just a contested ball beast, and he was awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I'll kick off for our Monday villain. Mine is the AFL for not fixturing any Thursday night matches for round 7 and 8. Now, every Thursday night match, bar maybe round 1, has been sensational. Hands down, like the last 3 weeks, we've had some rippers on Thursday night. Yep. The last 2 weeks, it went down to literally the last 30 seconds of the match.
Yeah.
And we don't have any fixtured for round 7 and 8. And already the pundits have come out, people from Fox Sports, obviously not from AFL site. They'll never come from AFL HQ on this one. But everyone else has basically rounded the wagons and is just firing off arrows at AFL HQ, who's under fire for not putting in any Thursday night fixtures.
Yep.
And I don't know if it's like they're kind of afraid of that 5-day turnaround. I thought it produced a sensational game on Thursday night between Sydney and Essendon. They both had... the same turnaround, the same time, they were both exhausted and they both played lights out until the final siren.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a fan of a 5-day turnaround just to fit a Thursday night fixture, but I understand what you're saying. I don't know whether it actually makes the football better or not.
Brought it back to, I'd say, a more consistent level. Because if you give a team a lot of rest, then they can come out and play this really high tempo style for the whole game. And that's what used to happen when you'd have teams that have 8 days break and 6 days break.
Yeah.
Like, you would never bet on the team with a 6 day break. They were, I think there were about a 90% chance to lose purely by the fact that they had two less days of rest. Especially if they travelled from Western Australia.
I'm not against 6 day turnarounds, but I think 5 days is just absurd. It's an absurd turnaround.
Yeah, it's probably a bit of a hangover from COVID, but Thursday night is definitely better than Monday night, hands down.
Yeah, no, I will give you that. It's definitely better. Yep.
All right, your villain, please, Josh.
Well, I'm going to change mine. I had Chris Scott just because I like bashing Chris Scott, but I'm actually going to have Collingwood or Colling Wobbles as my villain this week.
Oh, I've got that later on.
Oh, do you? Oh, sorry.
That's all right. Yeah, like, go for it. Go for it.
Oh, maybe for slightly different reasons, but
even scumbag.
Well, they sort of played like rubbish, but more, it's just sort of starting to get talked about now. Their off-field stuff, you know. Yeah. Bucks' contract's up for renewal at the end of the year. He's not coaching well. The sort of changed man and the charisma and that he had when he took him to that grand final against the Eagles a few years ago sort of doesn't seem to be there. The players look a bit disinterested. They don't have a president, you know, and they just seem to be a bit of a club. Like, they look like they're lost at sea. At least the reporting would suggest they're lost at sea. So they're going to be my villain. And the reason I'm making them my villain is because they're one of those clubs who likes to sort of influence everyone because, they're one of the big Melbourne clubs. And it just annoys me that they try and influence people, less so without Maguire there anymore, but they sort of influence a competition, but they don't have their own house in order at the same time.
Yeah.
So they're my villain for the week.
No, I like it. And I really like the point about the club being a bit listless as well. You can look at the fact that they had a significant turnover of reasonably experienced to very experienced and certainly very good players in the off-season last year. They're looking at more turnover this year. Their salary cap pressure is extreme. They're even paying players to go play at other clubs, like Adam Treloar.
I'll tell you what, if we can't win it this year, and history would say we probably can't, right?
Yep.
But we'll give it a good shake in the finals anyway. And I'll be ecstatic.
Don't jump the shark, man.
Oh, I don't want to jump the shark. Look at, mate, like we said last week, the pot's boiling, the lid's rolling off down the street. You can't keep a lid on it anymore. We're playing finals this year, barring something catastrophically happening. But if we can't have it, I'd love to see Treloar getting a premiership medal with the Dogs.
Wait, there is the...
Collingwood.
I was going to say, I hope the AFL bring in the mid-season draft and he goes somewhere else and wins it somewhere else, apart from the Dogs.
Yeah.
That's just my personal preference on... You know, no thanks to
Dogs. Oh, I still hate North Melbourne more.
Yes. Look, with the Collingwood thing, like Brodie Grundy, they signed him up 7 years for $1 million.
Yeah, I know.
That is massive, massive money. And I'm surprised that clubs in the current environment are actually doing that.
Can they have a ruckman who dominates the ruck that much and not be able to take advantage of it?
He had 56 hitouts, not on the weekend, but the weekend before.
Yeah.
I think he only had like 12 to 14 hitouts to advantage. And they still lost. And then again, he dominated on the weekend and they still lost. They actually lost by 5 goals in the end.
I know. Anyway,
enough about this. I've got to talk about St. Kilda later. We normally do the clan files, but we've got so much already we've talked about, so we're going to skip over that one this week.
Yeah, we can get clown us for not organising clan files.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, everyone, about that one. It's on to the good, the bad, and the ugly. All right, so I'll kick things off with my good for the weekend, Josh. And I might not win too many admirers for this one, or I might lose a fair few fans for this one, but for me, the good was the absolutely superb finish to the Port Adelaide versus Richmond game. Port Adelaide should have been in the grand final, and arguably they should have won the grand final last year. But Richmond, they stuck in and they stole the game. But in the end, Port Adelaide, two players down. Got Dersma missing for up to 12 weeks. They've got Butters missing for, you know, indefinite with his cinemosis. They had four players with varying degrees of injuries of corkies and all sorts of things on the bench. And they just hung tough and just stuck it out to the end. It was an amazing win for a team that definitely, definitely earned it.
The only win that I can remember being gutsier than that is us when AJ played his last game when he did his ACL again.
Yeah.
And we lost someone else that game as well. Was it Kennedy? Kennedy, anybody else?
I can't quite remember, but we were down early in that game and we came back and we won it.
Came back. That was as gutsy as that game. I thought that they were... Port Adelaide were great.
Yeah, it was a sensational game. Josh, you're good, please.
Oh, I don't know whether this is a good, but it's definitely a funny. And that's Smiling Joe Danaher almost accidentally kicking what could be goal of the year. And if you haven't seen it, go to the AFL website and have a look at it. And he kicks, he's a left footer. He kicks on his non-preferred across his body. So right foot, and he's trying to center it so one of the other lines can run onto it. And it just rolls through the goals. And there's a shot of him on the sideline watching the ball roll through. And the look on his face, it's almost like he's disgusted he's accidentally kicked this goal. And he actually looks unhappy that it went through. And I just thought it was funny. So that's my good for the week.
Yeah, it's a bit like Darcy Parrish. There's shots of him where he just looks shocked that the ball just floated through when he was trying to pitch it up on top of the goal square.
Yep.
Bad. We've touched on this one before, but in particular, this is Collingwood's fade out. And they were in the game. Last quarter in the game, and GWS just blew them away. And yeah. Toby Green, another sensational game. But seriously, like, they have some issues at club.
Yeah, they do.
Your bad, please, Josh.
Just the injury to Heaney and Rampy.
Yeah.
Especially the Heaney one, because it really is... what would you call it?
It's going to hurt.
It's just farcical that that's how he got injured.
Well, apparently he played two matches. Well, with the Heaney one, yeah, farcical how he got injured, but with the
Rampy's already Rampy played one. Two matches with it, yeah.
Yeah, two matches with these fingers, so.
Yep.
He played, I think it was two or three matches last year with his broken hand.
Yep.
And then he finally said, no, I can't do it anymore.
Why were we even playing? Like, we were a rabble last year, so why were we even playing him anyway?
The alternative was Melican.
But who cares? Put Gould on the field, I don't care.
Well, that's why we moved McCartan to the back line to cover when Melican was playing. And
realistically, McCartan probably should have been there the year before, but yeah. Well, actually, it wasn't going to. While we had a lead, that wasn't going to happen. So.
Yeah, I know. I look at the defense now and I'm like, yeah, Lee probably doesn't really fit in much anymore.
Well, and you know what? It looks like both clubs, that trade for us and Port Adelaide have been awesome. It's enabled us to build
a
better list, and Ali is just going as gangbusters over there. So that was a really good trade for both clubs. And,
Hands
it's
down.
Really good.
No, it has been amazing. And for my ugly, from the round, it was North Melbourne's last quarter. It was a really pitiful, dreadful way for them to finish a match that they had every right to be in the mix for, and if not, you know, snatch it at the end.
Yeah. And their injury list over the last 2 weeks is horrendous as well.
Yeah. They keep falling, but they gave themselves every chance of being in this match. Every single chance. And they had two injuries in the first quarter.
Yep.
They led at three-quarter time, and Adelaide weren't playing good football. But North Melbourne's pressure and work rate was up, and then they just stopped.
Yep.
And it's happened 2 weeks in a row. They conceded 10 from the Dogs and 8 from the Crows. So they got to fix that now.
Yep. Man, they don't have the cattle anymore to do it. And what are they? They've lost two injured. And did Cunnington end up getting suspended?
Yeah, he's been offered one match.
Yeah.
For his ridiculous hit.
They're in a terrible position next week.
They are. I don't know if you watched the First Crack podcast, but they talked about it, about the fact that for the last 2 weeks running, North Melbourne have had the same four players almost predominantly, or like almost specifically the same four players throughout the entire last quarter at centre bounces.
Yep.
And they've just been getting smashed every contest in the last quarter for the last 2 weeks, so they need to fix that, yeah.
Yep.
You're ugly, please, Josh.
the injury to Stephen May, and I know it was an accident, and not ironically, but I always think that Tom Hawkins gets suspended or fined for stuff that nearly every other player wouldn't get suspended or fined for. I don't know. I just think the MRO doesn't like him. I don't like Tom Hawkins, but the MRO doesn't like him either. Sometimes he gets done for stuff and you go, really? Like, what?
Yeah.
You're going to give him a week for that? But I'm glad that, you know, I'm glad that they just left him alone on this. But it was just a freakish accident.
Yeah.
And it's really messed up Stephen May's face. He's got a fractured orbit in his eye and his eye swollen shut and it looks really ugly.
Yeah, it does.
The advantage for us is that he ain't going to be there when we meet them in a couple of weeks' time.
No. There's some interesting reporting, and I use the word interesting quite loosely here, because he also suffered a concussion. So he has to miss the next 12 days, right? He can't play in the next 12 days. One particular article I read, and I read a couple, but one particular article said he's likely to miss the next two matches because of concussion. Now, Melbourne's next two matches are within 12 days.
Yeah.
So it's not likely he will miss the next two matches. There's nothing likely about it. Fractured eye sockets, depending on severity, are usually 2 to 4 weeks. But in Stephen May's case, that was quite severe, so I will be shocked if he doesn't play. If he plays within the next month.
They can play it and he could be back in 2 weeks.
I'd be shocked, though, from what he had, if he's even back training inside 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, it is what it is. That's it. That's the cast again for tonight. Done. So, again, thank you, Josh, for coming on. It has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me. And I'm sure I'll get to watch another replay this week.
It'd be nice if you started watching these games live.
the life of a shift worker, eh?
No. Can't blame you for that one. You're out there saving us all. And again, thank you to everyone who's listened all the way through. If you do like what we do, make sure you jump onto Apple Podcasts if that is your preferred platform. Chuck us a like, chuck us a review. Let us know what you like and we'll hear from you soon, we hope. But Josh, until next time, cheer the Swans.
Go the Swannies.